Welcome, everyone, to DEI After 5, the show that focuses on topics across diversity, equity, and inclusion with some of the brightest minds in the industry. Here's your hostess, inclusive culture curator and coach, Sasha Thompson. Hey, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of DEI After 5. All right, so we all know that there's been so much going on in the corporate space around teams being let go. And more than not, it's usually around the diversity teams, the recruiting teams, you know, et cetera. But organizations still need to find underrepresented talent. They need to be able to tap into spaces and places where they don't necessarily recruit. And so if the people aren't there, what are some opportunities? What are some other venues that organizations can use? And so today I wanted to dive into just one aspect of that by talking to today's guest, Byron Slosser, who is the CEO and founder of Hello Hive. And so we're going to get into some of the things that are important for organizations to think about as they're looking to recruit talent. So Byron, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Pardon the New York voices behind me, which are sirens and ambulances and everything else. But
all good.
Having some fun with you.
All good, all good. So Byron, for folks who may not know you or what you all do at Hello Hive, can you give us just a little bit of insight?
Sure. I kind of lead a little bit with who I am, because I think that overall what we're up to is using technology to make sure that people are meeting people and to humanize a lot of a process that I think has become a bit archaic and mechanic and forgetting that human beings exist within the culture. But my name is Byron Slosser. I'm the CEO and founder of Hello Hive. I am originally from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I'm one of six kids. Ended up in New York following Hurricane Katrina in 2005 and spent a good bit of my time prior to Hello Hive in the more traditional career landscape, working for many universities on behalf of students. Through that, I saw some opportunities for us to make more meaningful the experiences of students coming in without requiring them to know anything when they get to college. Right? I think, unfortunately, college has become a place that instead of showing up knowing that you need to know nothing and having an opportunity to learn when you're there, you're pretending to know who you are so you can get a job the minute you step foot on campus. And I was one of those, right? And so how can we, with the right technology in hand, really empower next generation talent with more resources and more of a voice and participation and selection in the recruiting process rather than only being looked at as candidates or applicants, really as those that are on one side of a two-way conversation and a two-way relationship. So we launched Hello Hive in 2020 with two main purposes. One, to use technology to make sure that no one needs any personal, financial, or otherwise inequitable resource to achieve career success. And number two, to really look at diversity from a diversity of lived experience lens, to look at it as something that is ever-evolving, all-inclusive, self-identified, so that whether the world is great or whether the world, you know, is blowing up on itself again, we always have one place to come to really understand and welcome in next generation talent from a myriad of ever evolving backgrounds.
There's so much that you just said that I want to unpack. like just so much. You know, but I appreciate what you were saying around how students show up to four-year institutions, right? So I started my career in higher education years ago, and it was very much this, I kind of have an idea what I want to do, so let me use this time to figure that out, which has now morphed into, this is just a stepping stone to get to this career, right, that I want. And there's a lot that's lost in that process, I think. Of learning and growing and getting to know who you are. And so I appreciate, you know, what you're saying around kind of removing some of those inequities so that we're all starting with, okay, some of the basics, some of the foundations of this. So I'm thinking about you know, what we're seeing right now around diversity and inclusion, especially in higher education, and a lot of places and spaces are getting rid of DEI, right, at the university level. How is that impacting kind of the work that you all do, or is it impacting you all at all?
It's interesting. When we launched, diversity has always been something, and I think that I'll probably say it 14,000 times while we talk today, self-identified, all-inclusive, and ever-evolving. Mm-hmm. My value to the workforce is not only that I'm part of the LGBT community. For me, more importantly, it's that I am a gay Southern Jew from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, that went to Catholic school my entire life, that has 5 siblings, and I'm number 4 out of 6, which is lower middle, which is the worst positioning ever in a family, you know, who is a sociology major, who had no idea that finance could have been a thing because of my relationship, you know, balancing skill sets. There's a lot in that upbringing, right, that makes me extremely relevant to where I go to work. And that is what this is about, right? It's looking at our identities and saying, great, now what value do I want to bring? What do I want to share rather than disclose? Mm-hmm. Because there's a big, big, we can talk about just the wording that we're using around some of this stuff.
Yeah.
So when I do show up, right, I'm showing up as, I'm not a big fan of like my full self or my best self, but like I'm showing up as who I know I am at that point in time. And I feel good about it. And I'm being welcomed into a family or a culture, not just an office, mm-hmm. That really understands me a little bit more. So when we look at DEI in good times, right, or in tough times, I think having one place for both sides of the conversation to exist, and particularly for me, for next generation talent to inform what we should be thinking about. With the self-identified piece, we have learned very quickly at Hive, you know, we have, I think, 32,000 students from over 1,600 schools. Mm-hmm. Close to 40% of them first identify as first-generation college students, right? What a wonderful and resilient lived experience that if companies focus just on that, right, or on socioeconomic status or on student athletes, mm-hmm. every identity that is a priority or representation interest right now or in the future would walk into our doors organically. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big piece of how to approach this right now. If you welcome everyone, you broaden the pool. And if you, that everyone really feels like they can be themselves and share more about themselves, then we do get to the same outcome without only that linear approach that I think right now is very important, but I think for a lot of companies is a bit intimidating.
Yeah, I love the fact that you're really focusing on, you know, self-identified, because for so many people, that's a hard thing to do. because they may not have even done some of that unpacking themselves, mm-hmm. of how they identify or what's important to them. And, you know, I'm thinking about what you were talking about, just that pool of students that are first generation students, right? And in this time and age, that there's still so many first generation college students. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, their bias is, oh, everybody's gone to college. Right, you know, and so there's this pool that is forgotten or not even thought about because it's not that person's experience or that organization's experience. So I love that. On a personal side note, I was kind of giggling because, you know, you were saying you were a sociology major that didn't know about finance. And I was a sociology major that started as a finance major. And I was like, this isn't
not right.
I was like, this is not it for me at all. My mom was in banking and she was like, oh yeah, finance. And,
yeah, so like looking at the first generation college experience too. First off, there are wonderful companies that are empowering and really growing into this type of effort. I would be remiss not to mention Dee McDougall at Capco. Capco was one of the first companies that I met that had a first generation focused ERG. Right. And so I think that we are seeing it develop a little bit into the space. But with first generation college students, I've learned a lot. Right. So when we launched, first generation college students were not on my radar. That wasn't my lived experience. But I knew that if we built for students first, right? Everybody else builds for companies thinking students are going to show up. I built for students to make companies come, right? I saw enough of the broken space that is the reason 25% of students last year even use career centers for internships. I should not be required to do so much when I'm in college to worry about margins and hyphens on a resume. We develop patented technology that builds formatting for resumes, so I get to tell my story. And through that story, the experience of me as a person, whether it's first gen or community college, right? But a first generation college student, as they're looking at finance or other traditionally kind of, you know, very visible careers, first gen students come into college, right? And like me, I wasn't first gen, but I didn't have a lot of perspective around careers. We need time to develop that once we're there. And so we're on a little bit more of a delayed career maturation cycle. And so what we do is, like me too, I went in as pre-med and then I met organic chemistry and I was like, I'm not pre-med. That was the end of my sophomore year. So now I'm like, uh-oh, investment banking just passed me up. Right. Cause I need to know, like when I was, my son back here is like 5 and a half, like investment banks are gonna start recruiting him next year.
Yeah.
Right? So how do we create a space that gives me that time once I get there?
Yeah.
To understand something, choose that I'm interested, and then become prepared by the time I need to recruit. And that's the whole purpose.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that, and we were just using first time college students, I mean, first generation college students as an example, but you know, that whole idea of what does diversity look like, needs to shift. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that it's shifting from the definition that you use, the definition that most DEI practitioners use, I don't think has changed. I think, and I've been talking about this with several people, right? It's like DEI needs a new comms plan, right? We need a new messaging plan. And because it's been so focused on this group or that group, we miss out on the diversity of diversity. Like we miss out on all of these other groups that could be impacted. When I worked in tech, one of the biggest groups that that it had its own area of focus was military spouses, right? Nobody was thinking about military spouses. But when you think about, okay, who can gain some skill sets that may not have skill sets because they're moving around so much, right? That was a group that no one had thought about.
I will, like, I love that you said that, because what we're seeing in complete, you know, to be alongside that is on our resumes, we give students the opportunity to self-identify and have that just be a line item on their resume, because when they, any resume that goes to every employer, that information has only been provided by the student, right? It's only going in for an opportunity they're qualified for. We are in the business of protecting their privacy, not selling it. And because of that, we see these moments of, wow, I haven't thought about that. Recently, as of last summer, so last summer we took, I think, over 4,000 students through some virtual programming across tech, consulting, and finance. And through that, we did some resume sessions, right? And I do think that resumes are very relevant, and one page can tell your whole story rather than trying to just keyword it into an applicant tracking system. But we started seeing a decent number of students self-identifying as dependents of military families, right? We talk about vets a lot. We don't talk about their kids. Mm-hmm. And that is the piece of the workforce that's coming in droves. Like, think about that experience of, you know, alongside one of my parents, if not both, moving from town to town, acclimating to new environments. Like, that's the good stuff, right?
Yeah. And that's a skill set a lot of people don't have, right? Like, being able to adapt. Being able to go into new situations on every 2 to 3 years, like however it is, like those are skill sets that need to be highlighted. So absolutely.
And through that, it was so cool because we got to see, you know, one student talked about this in one of our sessions a week later. And this is the power of technology, Sasha. Like, then we started seeing students identifying as dependents of disabled parents.
Yep.
Like, this is the stuff, right? Like, this is the stuff of what makes me feel so good about my different lived experience that empowers me, that makes me proud of myself, mm-hmm. rather than disclosing something on a form and worrying about that. And I think that's where we got to find the balance and really create new environments.
Yeah. So I want to flip this on its head a bit, because, you know, I love that this is opening up new opportunities, creating new spaces, or opening up old spaces to new people. But then you have the groups that have been at the forefront, historically disenfranchised, that are feeling, well, you know, everyone else is getting a shot but me, right? I'm thinking of like what is happening at the state level against the LGBTQ plus population. I mean, there's just some rollbacks that are very concerning to me. You know, right now what I'm seeing with even some states saying Black history doesn't even exist, right? And so I can hear this other side of folks that is like, but we're still being lost in this, right? And so how do you make sure that those individuals are not feeling that they're going to be marginalized yet again in a system that allows for everyone's diversity to shine?
Mm-hmm. As a 45-year-old, almost 46, all I do is listen and take advice from my kids, my early career job seekers, my college students, right? Mm-hmm. Amplifying their voices, understanding them more, having them feel part of a process, even if it's a frustrating process. I've got my responsibility right now is on kind of, you know, one sliver of the overall environment, and that is to make sure that students in college and coming into the workforce for the first time are as comfortable as possible and feel like they understand as much as they can. That's all we can do. And so I think that I also am new to the DEI space, right? So from a traditional lens, I stepped into this 3 years ago because I never even saw my background as something relevant to talk about at work. And so I think that where I'm focused and where we're focused as a company and just me as a human being is making sure that transparent conversations exist, that we treat this generation of talent not as kids, right, but as really those who can help mentor us and inform what we build. And if we just maintain, I think, the level of priority around ensuring that that is still happening, that the spaces that they walk in, whether they're great, decent, moderate, or bad, they're still going to feel better about being in those spaces, and they can choose to impact that however they want. But it's frustrating. It's also brand new. We never thought we would be in a world where so much stuff is happening that has never happened before. And that's become the consistent thing. So it's just getting by.
Buckle in. It's not going anywhere. You know, so I am, my brain goes in a million different directions mm-hmm. all the time. And so, you know, my passion and one of my, I was going to say ventricles of my heart, but that's a little too technical. And you're the medical, I think that's why I didn't do any of that. is with students, right? I absolutely, you know, anytime a student reaches out to me, like what is it that you need? I'm always there. But for our listeners, for the folks that watch us, many of them are in corporate spaces. And so I can see their wheels turning on, you know, how can we tap into this? What is it that organizations, before we even, you know, connect them to you and the work that you do, what is it that they need to be prepared to have in place before they even come to you? Like, what are some of the things that, yeah, that they need?
Not much, right? Okay. I think an open mind. They need to have, from a corporate partnership client standpoint, you need to be invested in bringing early career talent into your organization. Quick sidebar, but you know, we are now as a company, you know, almost 3 years in. I learned very quickly early on that as a hyper growth stage, early, you know, startup, this was not the space for entry level talent. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think one is really saying, am I ready for that? Because think about this. Like, I came from 20 years of just working with college students. So the first thing I wanted to do when I launched a company was like empower them and bring them in. That didn't work, right? Because I could not afford at our early stage for anyone to not know exactly what they're doing the minute they got here. So I do think you got to look around, and regardless of like, you know, DEI initiatives or other environmental factors, is this place conditioned or ready to bring in that level of talent, number one?
Yeah.
So I guess there is a piece of that that is relevant. But then it's just, you know, if the answer is yes, then you got to have an open mind, and you got to be willing to be wrong a lot, or to have a lot of what you thought really reconsidered. Mm-hmm. We did a panel. So when we get invited into speaking opportunities, I like to bring a lot of our students with us, right? I do a lot of reverse mentoring. And, you know, we learn so many things that just are like aha or duh moments of what can companies be doing better. And, you know, with financial services, consulting, big companies, we've seen that to get someone to move to a city for an internship or a full-time job that is not from that city, it's not only the salary or the compensation being great, but if you're not sending a housing stipend 4 months in advance, nobody can move. So to move to New York as a first-time New Yorker, you got to put a deposit down 2 months in advance, where a lot of companies are still just retroing it once you got there. So you got to be open to like really rethinking some of the very basic things that you're doing. And then you just got to be good people. You know, good people make bad decisions. Good people make mistakes. But the general rule is we invite you into our community. If you want to do well, you don't have to have done well to be here.
Yeah. I appreciate that. And folks that have listened to me have heard me say, you know, this is more than just checking a box. Oh, we have this talent. Let's check this box. It is, how are you preparing the body for this new organ that's coming in, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're doing open heart surgery, you have to prepare the body for this new heart. And so it takes a process to do that. And so I appreciate you using those examples, because I think so many organizations, not from a bad place, but again, from a place of not necessarily knowing and understanding or operating from where they were when they were at that point in their lives, things have shifted, things have changed, and understanding this is a different generation than, you know, who they were when they started their careers. And so we're now in this post-pandemic space, organizations, like you were saying, rent, right? 2 months, 3 months, 4 months of rent is now part of this. It's not just that financial salary compensation. It is, you know, transportation. How are people, is it close to where we need to be? Do they have to learn the metro system? I'm in the DC area. It's probably one of the easiest metros to learn. Mm-hmm. But you have to learn it. You have to understand how to get around and navigate. And it's not just the train, right? Trains, planes, all the things. So I really am glad that you said it the way that you did, because people need to understand, organizations need to understand that there's a preparation process that needs to take place. And it's not just saying, yes, we want this talent. It's, are you prepared to have the talent? And are you, what are you willing to do in order to ensure the success of that talent? Some of the metrics that irritate and frustrate me is they love looking at like the recruiting metrics, right? We're getting them in. But I'm like, okay, but who's going out the back door? How long are they staying? And so that's the piece that I think is important as well for organizations to think about. What are you doing to ensure who's coming into the door is successful? Right? You're not just checking the box to say, see, look, we brought in all this diverse talent and they're running out the back door just as fast. And so I think that that's another piece that organizations need to consider. Now, that being said, is that something that your organization kind of holds the hand through that process as well? Or like, what does that look like?
I have so much to say to that. I'll go there for a second. I think that when you look, let's look at just the 8 years, 8 to 10 years from high school into college, you know, into your job. I think that there are some consistencies in what's kind of can use some enhancement in the entry level getting into work as also getting into college, right? So I think you look at the college space, and a lot of the college admissions process is built around getting them in, right? Not getting them out, right? But it's the college's job to prepare, to resource, to give them voice and knowledge to forge their own directions and wants to, because that's what high schools do, right? And so I think you're seeing, but there's this interesting counterbalance of it only being on the company to bring them in and cultivate them and grow them and develop them. And so I think that it's really a lot of all of our responsibilities, not just the companies, right? So what we do is the way that students engage with us, we're free for all students, we're free for all schools, we're free for all nonprofits who work on behalf of any students or schools, but we ask students and require them to put in the work, right? So they have to go through a career center in the cloud, they have to build their resume with our technology, they actually have to demonstrate some intentionality and some commitment to the process. And because of that, they don't only feel empowered, but they now have refocused and rather than spaghetti against a wall, have said, this is where I want to go and let me be more intentional in that first step. And because of that, the company has to do less and they're staying longer, right? We've got 100% retention rates at some of our biggest clients over the past 3 years because the student had an option and felt like they selected it. And so that's the one piece. The other side of the retention conversation, I do think there's a difference in how we need to look at retention from whether someone was released from a job because they couldn't do it or whether they chose to leave.
Right, right.
And if they chose to leave, by the way, I still don't think that we should count it against retention unless they chose to leave the channel, right? So if I'm in consulting and I left, you know, said consulting firm because I wanted to be closer to my parents in San Francisco, but I joined another consulting firm, I think we need to focus on channel retention, not company retention.
I like that.
So there's a lot there, but I wanted to kind of like, it really is, it starts with getting them into college first, making that a little bit more equitable, right? Then college is focusing on as much on helping get them out and getting in, and then us doing along the way, but it's a lot of folks involved in this whole journey, and it shouldn't just be up to the end recipient to do everything.
Right. And I like that. I appreciate that because that you said one of my favorite words, right? Intentionality. And the student being intentional in what I want to do. And they may not even have a full idea because I'm thinking just of my experience, right? Like I said, I started working in higher education and then I'm like, all those student loans that I have, this higher education salary is not going to pay those. So, right, my next path was finding something that was higher education adjacent. And then from there, because I ended up in marketing somehow, I ended up doing marketing in tech, right? Okay. So it was just very interesting path, but it's always funny to me how people say, you know, it looks like you were so intentional with your career choices. And I'm like, really? Because that's not how it felt. But hindsight being 2020, I was very intentional about what skills do I want to attain during this process. And I was not picky on where, but I knew what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate, you know, that intentionality and making sure that even if people offboard from an organization, if they're staying within that industry or they're picking up a skill to take somewhere else, right? It's still the part of a channel. So I love
intentionality, of course, 1,000%, right? Intentionality can be commitment to the process. But I mean, just think about this. The average college student changes their major 3 times. But then we expect for them just to say, yes, this is what I want and stay there forever. No, like I always tell like the majority of our kids, our college students, I say the first step out of college doesn't have to be everything and rarely is it. It needs to be something. It shouldn't just be anything, right? But that's something just middle first step, right? Like I had five different careers before this. Like take a little bit of the pressure off. And just say like, okay, we're still figuring ourselves out. And unless I'm going to be an investment banker, because my dad was when I was 3 years old, then I'm probably going to have to pivot a little bit when I get into college or even out of college into my job.
Yeah, I love it. And my wheels are turning. We're going to do another bit of a pivot. So Byron, this is interesting work. And, you know, we've started our companies around the same time, that 2020 timeframe. So I truly feel like understand what it means to be a business owner in this time and day and building a business during, you know, a pandemic. What are the things that you do to take care of yourself? Like, how do you fill your cup?
It's been tough. In addition to, you know, launching a company, I also had, you know, my first and only son in 2018. And so I like to say, you know, I've been raising a company and a kid at the same time. But I have learned a lot about myself. I don't turn off at all. I'm extremely ADHD and OCD. It does not make for the natural ease of understanding work-life balance organic for me. What I have done is I am very self-aware and I take on commitments, formal commitments, because I need to have that formality to separate me from work. I mean, I love this stuff. Mm. This has been my entire life. Byron, my son, that was not my idea, by the way, my husband. Long story short, but I took my husband's last name. We decided Byron would be Byron. My initials are now BS, which is great. So that's fun. but he's now in kindergarten, right? So I am class dad. I am co-chair of the all-school multicultural committee. I didn't just want to be a volunteer because I knew I wouldn't give it the space. Mm. And so formal committee membership, I have to be there for these meetings, right? And so I think that's how I've found a way to withdraw a little bit from work. But, you know, any startup CEO will tell you it's very hard. I meditate. I walk to work. But as much as I can, I just hang out with my husband and my kid because I don't even have time to do that these days. And so not much, but it's intentional. I'm trying to figure it out, but I haven't figured it out just yet, to be honest.
Yeah, it's hard, right? And that's why I asked the question, because I think so many people, some people are very intentional about it and others are just like, you know, I do the things that I can. And so I was talking to someone else not too long ago when they were talking about meditation. And I was like, that's something I do every night. Like, that's how I shut my brain down, because if I don't, I'm thinking about the next email that I need to send out or the next, you know. And so being very intentional and honoring that space. And so I appreciate that. And I was, yeah, the walk to work. Fortunately, mine is like 20 steps upstairs, but it's still something that once I'm here, I don't go back, you know.
And it's hard. I mean, I think we put a lot of pressure on everyone, including, you know, our students, to take the space. It's really hard to figure out.
Yeah. You have to find what works for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. So Byron, if folks wanted to find out more about the work that you do, Hello Hive, contact you, how can they do that?
HelloHive.com. My email address is Byron@HelloHive.com. I've got my LinkedIn up. Very excited that I just hit 25,000 followers. I was not a very popular kid in college. So the joke is now that I'm finally the guy on campus that I wanted to be when I was in college. and so that's how to get a hold of me. I'm also extremely available. And I think a lot of not having that many friends when I was kind of coming up and coming out has encouraged me to take advantage of this and really form communities of students and colleagues and treat those as real relationships. So feel free to reach out. I'm happy to get to know you.
I appreciate that. So Byron, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I love this conversation. Like I said, students are near and dear to my heart. So this is something that I think other organizations really need to think about and consider as they are looking at their recruiting and just being intentional about the space. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Absolutely. And thank you all for joining us for this week's episode of DEI After Five. Hopefully you were able to walk away with a few nuggets or some ideas that you can take into your organization. You can find us here every Tuesday at 5:15 p.m. on YouTube or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Be sure to like, share, subscribe, do all the things. And until next time, have a good one.